This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Yeah.
Tristan, Tristan, everybody's feeling great. They're Tristan, Tristan, they have Tristan the night away.
Wow.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 of the Fan. We're broadcasting live from 1860s in Soulard. Taste of Soulard Saturday and Sunday. 1860s Taste, Crab Cakes, and Jambalaya. They'll be represented well. Their food is just outstanding here. On Sunday, they have the Paw Oscars from 2 to 6 o'clock. So we're on the corner of 9th and Geyer. And remember, after all Blues victories, the next day, lunch is half price. So half price lunch is tomorrow, Martin.
Frank, I'm circling the neighborhood trying to figure out I've been here and I knew where I was going, and I said, what is the address? The address is 1860. I mean, that CBC education was put to the test. Driving around the block, I said, what's the actual street address? It's 1860. You can't miss it.
And this is a classic bar. It's been around, I guess, since the 70s. And they have the best two bartenders in the country. Charlie Marlowe loves Pam and Tammy Joy. I do, too. They're great people. This is your first time here? You were here?
I missed the last remote when you guys were here flexing. And, in fact, I think Chuck was stopping by a local high school.
To lift so he can look good for the girls?
He was getting a little bicep workout in.
Curls for the girls? Very good. We're joined by the commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, who's got Arch Madness just right around the corner, Doug Elgin. Doug, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Great. Always a thrill to hang out with you guys.
How about your conference? You have three teams, 9-5. The question is, has the Valley ever had a regular season close with three guys at the top?
We have not. And I think that would be certainly fitting when you consider the competitive balance we've had in the league this year.
I think Drake is the team that we talk about the least. I know in your offices you're very aware, but we tend to focus on a Missouri State, occasionally a Southern Illinois. But tell us about the Drake team. They're already at the 20-win mark.
Yeah, and I think that was that's really surprising, considering that Nick McGlynn, their center, who's a Player of the Year candidate in our league, was the only returning starter. They hired Nico Medved, parted to go to Colorado State, head coaching job there. They hired Darren DeVries, who was a 20-year assistant coach at Creighton, played at Northern Iowa. And he has, you know, that city is on fire for Drake. They have had a great year. They've won some significant non-conference games, and they find themselves having won six of their last eight games. They're going into the tournament red hot right now.
And Missouri State, kind of out of nowhere, 9-5, also tied for the top spot with Loyola.
Yeah, not a lot of new kids on the roster, but Dana Ford, the new head coach there, another rookie head coach who has the possibility of becoming only the fourth rookie head coach to win the Missouri Valley regular season title in his first
What's
year.
What's his background?
He was he grew up in the Carbondale area, played at Illinois State under Dan Muller, and went to coached with Greg Marshall at Winthrop. Wow. Went to Wichita State with Greg Marshall, and then he went to Illinois State with Dan Muller as assistant coach. Tennessee State head coach, and now he's the head coach at Missouri State. Long story there, but great young coach, a lot of fire. He's really he's got his kids playing really hard.
How much play did the Valley get out of that half-court buzzer beater? I mean, you can't buy that kind of coverage, can you? Where there's probably a sportscaster in Spokane showing that play. Talking about two Valley teams.
There were actually two. A Valpo guard banked in a shot from half-court to beat Illinois State, and then you know, the shot that took place real recently with Jared Dixon at Missouri State. Again,
You're right. Both times it was Illinois State.
Right.
Yeah. We were going up to Chicago last Monday, and we ran into a Culver's. Frank, I was just using the restroom. We weren't getting any food, you know,
right,
paying tribute to Majerus. But the local paper in Bloomington, it said something like, it happened again, and it was about the Missouri State buzzer beater, and I was forgetting that was the second time. But you get so much coverage out of that. I mean, you're on ESPN.
Oh, and absolutely.
So as great as Porter Moser's season was last year in that Final Four run, bottom line, it's 16-11 overall. They're going to have to win this tournament to get in.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are in a position, Frank, where we have to have – we're not going to get a second bid. We know that. Our highest-ranked team is not in it's not ranked where it needs to be to get – consideration. So, yeah, they've got to win it. When you look at Loyola, They've got a key player hurt. Lucas Williamson, a 6'4 guard from Whitney Young High School in Chicago, is out with a broken hand. May come back. They lost three really good players on that Final Four team. Ben Richardson, Andre Jackson, and Dante Ingram. All three of those guys departed, graduated. So they knew they were going to be retooling to a certain degree. But they at times have played like the best team in the league.
Yeah.
We've got five others who have as well.
Oh, there are times where I think Krutwig, when he's dominating down low and he's really efficient and skilled, not mm-hmm. maybe a great athlete, I think, boy, this is – how could they not run away with the Valley? But then they had these clunkers. What was the Missouri State game? They got beat by 35?
70-35. And, wow, that's – it's crazy the way teams have played extremely well at home. We've had more road wins this year, I think, than we have in recent years as well. So it's just – it's highly competitive and unpredictable, I think, at this point.
What kind of bounce did Loyola get? I mean, are there games now events? Are they selling them out in the wake of last year's run?
They are, and, that's a problem. It's a tough place to get to park. Small arena, which is a good thing. It's just under 5,000, their seating. And, the tickets now are going on StubHub for big money. So they've got the atmosphere now. That's all they were really lacking in recent years.
I wonder if Porter could end up having a Greg Marshall kind of existence where maybe year after year people thinking, oh, he's going to make that jump, and then 15 years later he's still there.
Well, he's a Cubs fan. He's a Chicago kid, grew up in Naperville. No real reason to leave. He's got a 9-year contract.
Is that right?
He's got security.
A 9-year contract.
Maybe seven, I'm not sure, but and, a significant raise is deserving. A young guy that's going to go only where he fits.
And financially, that run, I know it's a little complicated, but explain it in as layman a terms as possible of financially what that run means to the Missouri Valley Conference.
Well, specifically over the next 6 years, including this year, for the units, for the games they played in, there's a value to each game they play in. It's $8.49 million. That's going to be paid over that 6-year term for those games in which they played in the NCAA tournament last year.
So you're the athletic director at SIU Carbondale, and because Loyola makes that run, you get a check for?
You get a cut of it.
A couple hundred thousand each
equal,
team?
Equally shared, actually. Now, not to complicate this, but teams that go to the NCAA tournament get half the value of a unit, about $200,000 for every weekend that they play. So last year, Loyola takes $600,000 off the top of about a $7 million payout, and then the rest is split equally.
Wow.
Complex.
So the rest gets in that, 200-ish range? They get a check each year, $200,000, $300,000?
Our average distribution in the last couple of years has been $400,000 to $500,000.
Okay, so you're watching, you're a Drake fan, and you better say, Loyola, keep going. I mean, if you're...
Oh, absolutely.
And do they actually poll, you think, for one another at that point?
When in the days when we had two or three teams in the NCAA tournament, you could hear the fans chanting MVC, MVC. And, that's part of it, but it's the prestige that comes with success in the tournament as much as anything. Helps everybody recruit, helps everybody draw more fans.
I would think it makes it harder, however, on some of these coaches because they can all – every AD now can point to Loyola and say – well, they made a run. How come we're not making a run?
Well, ironically, Creighton leaves in 2011, and lo and behold, Wichita State goes to the Final Four that year. Wichita State announces they're leaving. The next year, Loyola goes to the Final Four. So I think the mindset in our league is, who's next? Who's going to be that program that steps up? And this is kind of a transitional year. No great teams, no second bid for sure this year, and that's probably going to be what happens across the country in mid-major conferences. Not a lot of at-large bids are projected right now, but I do think that you're going to see programs stepping up. Three new head coaches in our league, Walter McCarty at Evansville, who came from the Boston Celtics, played at Kentucky on a national championship team. Darren DeVries in Drake, and he's an Iowa guy who played at Northern Iowa. His brother played for the Detroit Lions for a long career. And Dana Ford at Missouri State. All three have really energized their programs. They're drawing better. I think you're going to see those programs improving over the next couple of years.
So you don't have a dominating team, but you have so many teams that are right there. I mean, you have a chance to only have one team in the Missouri Valley Conference to have a losing record overall, and that right. could be Evansville. I mean, everybody could be either 500 or better, and that's probably extremely rare.
And you look at the teams that we lost, Creighton and Wichita State, great fan bases that came to St. Louis for the tournament, and you look at who we've replaced them with. Loyola had a 1-17 record in the Horizon League 2 years before they came into our league. 4 years later, 5 years, whatever it is, they're in the Final Four. Valparaiso, a team with championship, a program with championship pedigree, I think they were in five NCAA tournaments over the past 9 years in the Horizon League, something like that. They're coming into the league not looking to be a second division program. They're looking to be a championship contender. And next year they've got eight juniors who are going to be seniors a year from now, including Derek Smith, Rick Smith's son. He's 7'2". They're going to be really good next year. They beat UNLV on the road this year. They were 10th in the league last year. So I think we're going to see a renaissance in our league. I think we're going to see programs stepping up.
Doug Elgin, the Missouri Valley Conference Commissioner, is with us. Frank Martin live today at Soulard, 1860 Saloon at the corner of Geyer and 9th. And you know he's the commissioner, Frank. We sit down, and he's got a chair just like we have. And they said, no. They bring over a padded stool yeah. with a back on it. And I said, clearly Jack Watkins called ahead. The commissioner has arrived. They rolled out his chair. I'm wondering about Arch Madness because you don't have a dominant team. I would think some years fans maybe skip it and say, well, Wichita State's going to run the table. Well, this year you could be a fan of any number of teams and say, you know what, I'm going for the weekend and we're going to the damn tournament because can that help with ticket sales?
I think it has. I think it clearly has. And you've got teams that have hope. 2 years ago they knew they were facing a really big dog in Wichita State. I emphasize the word dog. And I must say.
Because they have a little bit of bark and a little bit of bite.
That's the reason, the bite. But
I was waiting for Frank to bring up Greg Marshall, but yeah, we didn't have to. A little bark, a little bite.
In the same interview. Yes. But, the, you know, I do think that you're going to see teams that advance to Friday, the quarterfinals, and you're going to see a lot of people coming in, a lot of walk-up traffic at the Enterprise Center with people that realize they have a chance to go to Sunday.
When's the last time a SLU Missouri Valley Conference discussion has been had?
I can say honestly, not recently. You know, obviously that would be a fit for us. That would be a team that have a huge impact on our league. They'd have regional rivalries again that would be renewed in a sense. They're in a great league. That's a league that I think got five bids, maybe six bids, 10, 15 years ago, eight years ago maybe. And a very competitive league. So, you know, I think when you look at conference realignment, the one shame is that you look at the West Virginias and Creightons of the world that have extended the travel for their student athletes. That's the real shame in it. Maybe it's a better fit for Wichita State to be in the American, but look at the travel that they've got in that league and same for West Virginia and other teams that really extend their travel through moving up to in realignment.
Yeah, nothing says a conference rival, Frank, like K-State going to West Virginia. You know, every time I see West Virginia playing a Big 12 opponent,
yeah.
it just feels weird.
Very
it
weird.
Doesn't, you know,
very weird.
As a commissioner, though, you probably understand the net rating or ranking. You can explain that to Martin and Frank better. Mm-hmm. Was the RPI flawed? Is that what happened? Is that how we ended up with this?
Well, it wasn't flawed when we were getting five teams or four yeah. teams or three teams. No, it's a different metric. It considers, it takes into effect the efficiencies, the offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, and the net efficiency. And Frank was a point guard, so in college, right?
Yes, sir.
So you can probably figure that out and articulate it. But it really is unknown as to how it would compare with the RPI. What the NCAA hasn't done, and I find a little fault with this, is they haven't released the formula. We know what goes into it, wins and losses, where it's played, offensive and defensive efficiencies, and margin of win. Capped at 10 points. You can't get more. If you win by 30, it doesn't count any more than winning by 10. So they along with that, they haven't gone back in time and said, what would the net have looked like two years ago and last year? How would that have compared with the RPI? So until we get that kind of data, and they still do the RPI, there are still individuals that do the RPI, and that's available on warrennolan.com, by the way. You can make that comparison, but not really until after Selection Sunday.
In your previous life, people don't know this, you were the sports information director at Virginia when Ralph Sampson was there. And I got to think, in the history of college basketball, that ACC conference tournament back then was the best ever. Because a lot of times you had to win the thing or at least get to the finals to get in. And all those NBA players, Maryland was great, Virginia was great, all Tobacco Row was awesome. That was just insane.
It was a family. There were eight teams when I was at Virginia in the ACC. Georgia Tech became the ninth, and now it's more of a consortium than anything. You don't know when you're going to get a team coming to your place in football. That might be 10 years out before you get a Clemson coming to your campus. And, you know, those were, in my mind, the heyday of the ACC. It was drivable. We had a few flights, but not many. And that's... it's typical of what's happened with other conferences. The Big Ten now has expanded. The A-10 has expanded. So you're seeing the, power five, a true power five with, I don't know how many total teams there are in that, 66 or something like that. And I don't know that it's necessarily better.
What's the greatest game you attended? Is there, or maybe how about most famous game that you were at, but then also your favorite, which might be a Loyola game last year, but how about a couple of favorites and a couple of the greatest that you can tell people, oh, that one, I was there.
Okay, probably my all-time favorite was Nevada last year. That put Loyola, Marcus Towns, made a winning three in the last couple of seconds, and they won that game to advance to play K-State. And then you realized it was possible. You really realized it. That was the best team they played last year, in my mind, including Michigan, I thought.
You mean Nevada, that good.
Yeah, Nevada,
yeah, still are, yeah.
Another game that I brought this up at a sports information meeting a couple years ago that we had in our conference was the Northern Iowa Bucknell game at the old Uni Dome, in a regular season bracket buster game that Northern Iowa won in overtime. Just a classic game. And looking back at really my all-time favorite, two all-time favorite, I grew up a Maryland fan, by the way, in Hagerstown, Maryland. Northern Iowa beat North Carolina when they were ranked number one in at Cedar Falls, Iowa, because Roy Williams takes his kids back home to play. That was a couple of years ago. And a classic game in 1981. Virginia hadn't won in Chapel Hill for decades. They went down there. I don't think Michael Jordan was there yet. Maybe he was. But Virginia won at Chapel Hill by a point. And I think Jeff Lamp, Lee Raker.
Jeff Lamp. Is this pre-Ricky Stokes? Is this
Ricky was
there. And Othello Wilson.
Rick was there.
Wilson.
Gosh, yeah.
We're old. Don't worry.
Oh, man.
And they were both from Ballard.
Yes.
In Louisville, those two, yeah.
Yeah.
Boy.
That was a really great team. And, you know, they had Perkins, Worthy. I think Jordan was there in 81. Think so,
because
Ralph.
Yeah, because 82, it would have been his freshman year.
Freshman year.
Now, you were at the Stepanovich game at the Meadowlands when he killed Ralph, even though Virginia won the game.
I bug Jack Watkins about that all the time.
Really?
Missouri. But, I was at that game.
How about the Samson-Ewing game, the first time they met?
That was the second game of the century. They built it on TBS, big deal. And that game started this journey. We played in Washington, D.C., Georgetown, Virginia. We flew to Anchorage and then went on to Tokyo and played Olajuwon in Houston and Utah.
Oh.
And on the way back on Christmas Eve, we played Chaminade. Lost that epic game where an NAIA team nobody's ever heard of beat the number one team in the nation. So that was quite a trip.
I thought for sure Doug Elgin was going to drop some Albert King, Buck Williams game from back in the Maryland days. The greatest thing about college basketball is, like, the Chaminade equivalent isn't going to beat Alabama in football. I mean, every great while there's that Appalachian State, Michigan football upset. But in basketball, there's a couple a year. I mean, look at Illinois lost to Florida International earlier this year. I'm just saying it happens quite a bit in college basketball. And doesn't that just add to the beauty of the game? Because, I mean, that's just not happening in college football.
What needs to happen in college basketball, I think, and I don't know that there's much support for it, is they need to expand the bracket. Because every year there are really good teams that are left out. Not only the mid-majors, but some Power 5 teams are left out. And you look at teams this year like Wofford, you know, Belmont and Murray State. Ja Morant is probably one of the nation's best players. If they don't win the OVC, it's likely they won't get in. And bring them all. Bring them all in. Make sure that every worthy team gets in the field. And that might mean going from 68 teams to 96. If you have 96 teams, you play one round with the bottom 64, and then you're back to a 64-team bracket. That would be, in my mind, the ideal solution to the issue.
All right, throw Jordan out of the equation because he's the obvious answer. Who's the next best college player you saw in person? Would it have been Bias or Ralph?
You know, it could have been. Well, Ralph was a unique player. He had skills that not many 7-footers have. He could basically be a big guard with his skill set. I think Lenny Bias, when you look back at his short career, was right up there with the greatest. And Durant also, I saw him as a freshman.
You saw Kevin Durant at Texas?
Mm-hmm, yeah, and I saw, I'm getting old. I won't even bring up the name, but because you'd be amazed that I can't remember his name. But Syracuse freshman.
Pearl Washington.
No.
Carmelo.
Yes, Carmelo Anthony. Thank you. A lot of names bouncing around your head when you have 10 teams a year. But, yeah, he was also, I thought, right up there with the greatest talent I've seen.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing about him. Not that we want to get into a big Carmelo Anthony discussion here, but he's going to the Basketball Hall of Fame. There's no doubt about it. When you're like a 10-time All-Star and you score those points. But the perception by most people right now is, boy, what a bust. Yeah. That guy was an unbelievable player.
So, yeah. Ralph was viewed as a bust, too, and yet he tore up a knee.
I think Ralph, for his career, he ended up still 20-10.
Yeah.
And he was an All-Star. And you know what the amazing thing about Ralph is, and I'm sure you remember it, is that game where he took a swipe in the NBA Finals at Jerry Seastead. Mm-hmm. The next game was in Boston, and he was booed relentlessly, and he kind of crumbled.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, as great as Ralph was, maybe he wasn't like the warrior that some other great centers were.
Ralph was a small-town kid from Harrisonburg, Virginia. I hate to say it this way, but kind of a sweet guy.
Yeah.
Nice, very, very polite. He had some fire. He had some fire, and you saw that in the old days in the ACC. But he had he not been injured and had that not happened, of course, I think, you know, he made a shot to send Houston to the playoffs one year.
Crazy shot on the block.
Was that off against Lakers. L.A.? Yeah, against L.A. So, I mean, he had a brief blazing career and showed greatness and certainly is a guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Arch Madness around the corner. We're talking the weeks March 7th through 10th. Will be a little later. Everything's a little bit later this year. Selection Sunday is on the 17th. So let's remind everybody about tickets to Arch Madness. How many years now in a row in St. Louis? Is it for some of your folks, kind of their first view every year? The Enterprise gets a little more updated.
Yeah, kudos to the Blues ownership. My goodness, that's a financial engine for downtown St. Louis. 25 straight years at Enterprise Center this year and the 29th year of Arch Madness in the great city of St. Louis.
How about just a couple of wild numbers? I know you probably have these roughly at the top of your head, like economic impact, and then how about total number of people that have attended Arch Madness?
Okay, we cleared 1 million probably 7 or 8 years ago, and I heard Frank Viverito, the great sports commission president who's done a great job here bringing events to St. Louis. I heard him say last year in an interview, he said something like, you know, they say that the economic impact of Arch Madness is $8 to $10 million a year on the average, let's say. And you can make that number anything you want. He said, in real money, that's $250 to $300 million over the length of the stay, the tenure of the tournament in St. Louis. So it's been big. We don't draw the crowds that we used to, but I think we're going to see an increase in attendance this year with so many teams thinking they have a chance to grab the ring on Sunday.
I think a lot of skeptics, when we get the economic impact, everybody rolls their eyes, and maybe some of our folks that are on the Board of Aldermen don't realize what the sports crowd is like, or maybe they just don't get it. If you're there during the Valley Tournament and you watch, sports fans spend money. They go into that place and order a bunch of food and drinks, and they're all wearing their gear. Then they walk down to the next bar or restaurant. You'll see them, whether they're wearing their UNI gear or their Bradley, and they literally are all over the town. And even the women's tournament at Family Arena, I'd be out at Westport, everybody's wearing their gear. The sports crowd, that's one thing that I don't know if politicians always get it, They spend money. It's not just the event. They're crawling all over the town.
And that's why the investment in the Enterprise Center was so critical. My goodness. I mean, that we now have a chance. We would not have gotten the 2020 first and second NCAA tournament rounds had it not been for the build-out. The SEC had an out to leave and not play their tournament here if they hadn't updated it. I tell you what, that's the greatest investment that St. Louis has made in our infrastructure, one of the great investments that we've made.
Yeah, refresh our memory. The next NCAA basketball event is
2020 first and second rounds at Enterprise Center, and we're hosting the NCAA Midwest Regional this year in Kansas City.
Very nice. Doug, great stuff. To get Valley tickets, what's the best way to do it?
You can, if you're affiliated with one of our universities, buy it from your athletic ticket office to sit with your fans. You can buy it from Ticketmaster. You can walk up to Scott Trade Center, Enterprise Center box office, and buy those tickets. We have a lot of corporate deals on archmadness.com, discount tickets. And we want to see St. Louis support this event and keep it here for a long, long time to come.
Doug Elgin, Commissioner of the Missouri Valley Conference, thanks so much. San Diego Padres have signed Manny Machado. We'll talk about that and many other hot items in the sports world when we come back, broadcasting live from 1860s. Come on by and say hello.